Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. I'm your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number 76. And as always, if you want to listen to us wherever you get your podcast, be it Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or on Spotify, feel free to subscribe there. Search Black and White and Red All Over. Throw in a Juventus as well, because as I've recently come to discover, there is another podcast that searches Black and White and Red All Over. So although I think the topics are not anywhere close to being the same as what we talk about here. So
it's a news podcast.
It is a news podcast that I don't think has posted an episode in about a year and a half. So at least we've got that on them. So anyways, now that we've got that said, let me bring in Sam Lopresi. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Danny. Who here had Juve Storia di un Grande Amore on their year-end Spotify thing? Anybody?
Did you have our podcast on your end?
My podcast was indeed on my Spotify. However, Juve Storia di un Grande Amore would have maybe been on there, but it's amazing how in less than 3 months, all of the songs that would have probably been in my top five ended up replaced by things on the playlist that we used to calm Julian down.
I was going
to
say, it probably skews a little younger these days.
It's not really. I mean, thank God we're not playing like Baby Shark or anything to him.
Just you wait.
Yeah, and right now we're trying to get him early. We're playing him show tunes, and he seems to really enjoy it.
Corner your family, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, corner of the sky is like number one on my list now because he loves that when he plays all the time. He likes Pippin. So,
and we've got Chucks. How are your show tunes doing, Chucks?
I'm perhaps showing my lack of being up to date with things, but I have A, no idea what that is, and B, I don't even have Spotify. So yeah, shame on me twice, I guess.
Broadway.
Yeah, right. Okay, yeah. You can always edit that out. So here I am. Good to see you.
And we are Sergio-less this week because, as we were joking beforehand and before we hit record, he is actually spending the weekend in a place that is having warm weather as compared to where the three of us are sitting. So,
fist shake.
That's right. With that being said, Samuel, what's your takeaway from the week? And does it involve the numbers 4, 2, 3, 1?
Yeah, it really does. You know, you and I specifically, but everybody has been calling for this for months now. But it really, and yes, you have to caveat that, you know, these were the two bottom teams in the league that we were playing this week. And Genoa in particular, not only are they in 19th right now, they also have an injury crisis, as far as the day is long. I was really looking forward to this game because I would like to have seen Nicolò Rovella and see what he can do really in person. I've watched a couple of Genoa games to keep track of him, but this would have been a nice little showcase for him, but he was injured midweek. But yeah, this is how the team ought to look. It fits everybody's skill sets the best. It's still not perfect, but the way this roster is put together with all these disparate players who don't necessarily fit together as a cohesive whole, it's the best that there is right now. And, you know, the ball was moving a lot better. The passing was a lot better, even from game to game between Salernitana on Tuesday and Genoa now. You know, the passing was crisper. It was clicking guys had ideas of where the ball was going and it was going there. The finishing needs work. When haven't we said that this season? But after a week in which Juve just had absolutely nothing in terms of attacking impetus at all and attacking ideas at all, to see these last two games and this formation change and to see the team actually start moving forward with an idea of what they're going to do, that's a real breath of fresh air. And it has to stay like this for the foreseeable future, I think, because otherwise, I mean, you know, what are you going to do with, you know, if you go back to the four, what are you going to do? Go back to the 4-4-2 and the offensive opportunities dry up again. I think that this should be here to stay, and it should have happened a lot earlier than this.
Yeah, I agree with that takeaway. I'll take it a slightly different direction though my takeaway.
Yes, I forgot to ask Chucks, what is your
No worries. I took the ball and ran with it. I saw the loose ball there and just pounced on it and ran with it. My takeaway kind of expands from my monthly recap, which is, you know, one section I wrote about in my review was about just our lack of attacking success this year. I that's probably the best word to use, because still at the time of speaking now, and indeed at the time of writing my review, then only six teams in the league have scored fewer goals than Juventus have. Those teams are still the bottom five actually: Venezia, Spezia, Genoa, Cagliari, and Salernitana. And our neighbors, Torino. So, yeah, I mean, that's not very good. I still don't think that's very good. Despite the fact that, okay, in the last week now, we've had consecutive 2-0 victories against, well, Salernitana and Genoa consecutively. But still, I thought, take the game against Genoa, for instance. Yeah, I mean, it was a very comfortable victory. We comprehensively outplayed them, but we're still extremely wasteful in front of goal. Granted, Sigo was in inspired form today, so I'll give him credit for that, of course. And most of a lot of our shots were on target. Just pulling up the stats according to LiveScore, 13 shots were on target. So, I mean, that is, well, good, very good, of course. I believe we had 27 shots in total or something like that. So, you know, that's roughly half of them were on target, which, you know, I think that is very good. But, you know, playing against other teams, we're not going to have the luxury of being able to only score 2 goals out of 27 shots taken in total. You know, we won't have that luxury. And that is reflected in the fact that we still have very, very low goal scoring record so far this season. To be precise, it is 22 goals scored in 16 games, which is, I mean, a tiny, tiny bit over 1 goal scored per game. That said, I mean, we've conceded 16 and 16 as well. So, yeah, that is exactly 1 goal conceded per game. So, you know, we've kind of gone up and down from defense being bad and attack being good to now defense being apparently better, which I think connects to Sam's point of the formation change, which, you know, I think has helped to protect the defense more. But then now we just need to score a little bit more. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what I took away from this week. But I mean, also it helped the fact that we played the bottom, 20th place and 18th place of the league.
Yeah. And obviously it's definitely, as Sergio would say, as he jokingly said, when you were gone last week, Chucks, our dearly departed Sergio, you know, he would say caveat, 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 caveat. Yeah. Like you just said, you know, two relegation battlers. And I think it's safe to say Salernitana, I can't spell it. Good, you know, good luck for me the rest of this episode. You know, it looks like they're essentially relegated already with how their season is going. So, you know, you take that into account. Yeah, these are games Juventus should have won with relative ease, especially with the way they did against Genoa. But I think, as we know, these games have been so far from routine for Juventus the last couple of years. It's, you know, you can't just bank the 3 points before kickoff like we have done in previous years, and then that's that, and you just have to wait for the team to score a goal or two and game's over. But for me, I feel like just the fact that this team looks and kind of like what Sam said, this team looks like they have an actual idea of what they want to do now as they attack, rather than, you know, it's kind of like, okay, the 4-4-2 with Rabiot on the left wing, it's really just kind of so unbalanced in terms of where the attack is coming from. It's like, okay, if Cuadrado isn't doing anything, if Chiesa isn't doing anything, if Dybala isn't doing anything, then we're screwed. Now it's like, okay, there's an outlet, whether it's Bernardeschi on the left, Kulusevski on the right, and we can get to Kulusevski later because he actually looks a little bit like the Kulusevski that I think we were hoping for last year and this year as well. And just, you know, there are more options now. And like we said, there needs to be better finishing. Hopefully that will come with time. But yeah, I think just the switch in formation has allowed this team to play a little more freely rather than, okay, let's pack 8 or 9 people behind the box and hope that we can hit somebody on the counterattack. So
it really does speak to how the season has gone, and really the last 2 seasons have gone when it comes to games like this, that until Paulo Dybala scored in the 82nd minute, I'm sure that everybody was on absolute edge, afraid that Genoa was going to equalize when they didn't take a shot the entire game.
I was afraid to start writing my post-game thread because I'm like, once I get about 300 words into this thing, guarantee you Genoa is going to score, because that has happened so many times over the last couple of years. It's like, well,
and it was like, and like literally Genoa did not take a shot the entire match, which I don't even think that like even in the super BBC and Gigi years I remember there were a couple of games where there were no shots on target. I don't think it's been a long, long time since we've played a game where the opponent did not take a shot over 90 minutes. But there I was, like, on the WhatsApp that we have for the club here in New York, saying, we have to kill off this game. We have to kill off this game. We have to kill off this game. Because that's just the way it's been. it really is, you know, it's striking that change in mindset. But going into this, the thing that I think the 4-2-3-1 does, and we've been saying this ad nauseum for a while now, the thing that the 4-2-3-1 does the best is that it puts players in their proper positions without the need to tinker. And if you have a player in his natural position, he's gonna be more successful, because that's just what his instincts do. You talked about Kulusevski just now, and in your post-game thread, like, how much more, you know, how much better does he look right now as a guy who can, you know, as a guy who can do what he wants to do on the wing, and what really made him successful at Parma, and what made him successful at the end of the year last year at Juve when Pirlo finally moved him out there, as opposed to, you know, playing through the middle like he had been for such a long amount of time these last 2 years. I mean, he still isn't perfect. He still really needs that right foot to come along. There's so many instances where I look at Kulusevski and I can see the cross there, but he doesn't take it because he just doesn't want to use his right foot. It's a lot like Dybala early on, but, you know, Dybala developed his right, and it's refreshing to see him hit with his right quite a bit now. But it makes when everybody's in the right spot, everybody's better. You know, Locatelli, like you said in your post-game thread, Locatelli has played in this formation for so long under De Zerbi, so he knows how it's supposed to work, and he has been commanding it. He has turned into these last 2 games that midfield general that we all thought he could be, and that Juventus kind of needed. He still needs more talent around him. Bentancur had a good game, not like the greatest. I'd really like to see him and McKennie together in this formation. But it's just nice to see everybody doing the things that their instincts tell them to do and doing them really, really well for the most part. Again, the finishing. Also, and this is more a question of just the availability of players at the moment, it is a little weird, that bank of 3 behind the striker. Right now, it's 3 left-footed guys, and they're all trying to get onto their left foot, and it's a little wonky. It does kind of throw things a little out of whack. You know, you get Chiesa back in the new year, throw him on the right side, and I think that changes things. I mean, put Chiesa into this formation and changes a lot of things. But overall, I'm just, you know, like I said before, I just keep my main reaction as I've been watching these last two games is just finally, because it makes me, I really do wonder what took so long. We'll never know. We're not in the locker room, but Allegri's a smart coach. He's used this formation before. What do you, you know, what took him so long looking at this roster the way it is?
Yeah. The only note I'll make on like a 4-2-3-1 is whenever I see a 4-2-3-1, I always wonder kind of what the difference between that and a 4-4-2 is. Just in practice, I mean, not just theoretical, but also in practice. And I guess what I come down to is, mainly one thing really, because for instance, AC Milan, you know, they play a 4-2-3-1 with, I guess it's what, Kessier and Benacer / Tonali and Brahim Diaz, Salamakers and Rafael Leao and Ibrahimovic. Wow, I actually know all that. I think the main difference is that trequartista, I guess, that one behind the striker, behind the main striker. So in our case, it's Dybala behind Morata. And in the case of Milan, it's Brahim Diaz behind Giroud or Ibrahimovic. So, you know, you compare those two players, and I think what makes, to me, basically what I'm trying to say is, like, I think a 4-4-2 is often very similar to a 4-2-3-1, just depending on that one. So I think if that one Diaz / Dybala is more of a striker, I think it leans more towards a 4-4-2, because in our case, I mean, Dybala is more a striker than a midfielder. Whereas from what I understand, from what I've seen, someone like Brahim Diaz, just again for the comparison, someone like Brahim Diaz is more of a, you know, midfielder than a striker. So I guess it's just, you know, what does that mean defensively? I think someone like Diaz would defend more when we don't have, or when out of possession, than Dybala would, for instance. So then, I guess without the ball, it becomes a 4-4-2 then, I guess. And I think it's just the main difference is what happens during attack, and then what happens with that one behind the striker. How much does he lean forward towards the attack, and how much does he kind of act more as a midfielder? And so I wonder if it's really, just coming back to Juventus, I wonder how much of it is indeed a formation change, or how much of it is just a specific tactical change just on Dybala, and Dybala and Locatelli / Bentancur. Has Allegri just told them to just kind of change their positioning more with the ball, or I don't know. How much of it is a formation change, how much of it is a, indeed, just a specific tactical change with those three players, those two in front of those two central midfielders, and then that one in the hole.
I think there's more of a difference between a 4-4-2 and a 4-2-3-1 than that. I also think it's the way the wingers play and the type of players that you deploy on that wing. You know, in a 4-4-2, for me, the wingers are not or the wide midfielders, I should say, are not deployed as far up. They are not so explicitly attacking as they are in a 4-2-3-1. And that changes the pattern of play. It changes the way passes move. It changes the off-ball movement, which is another thing when you look at this, at the formation change here, is the fact that, I think this has more to do with the formation change. Chucks, you might disagree, is that over the last two games, as opposed to last week, the off-ball movement was so much better. You know, against Chelsea and Atalanta, when we did have the ball, anybody that didn't have the ball was just standing there. These last two games, there's been the off the ball movement has been a lot better. It's opened up a lot more. And I think that, again, to the point is why the new formation it does matter, why there is really a change there, because it shifts the pattern of play forward. It shifts the way that the ball is distributed from out of the back. And I think that that's one of the things that's really started to suit this team, is that, you know, I think there's a sense of of the attacking players looking up and saying, all right, I can do this. I have permission to do this now. Let's go do it and have fun. It's a little bit like they always say in American football that the offensive line has a lot more fun run blocking than pass blocking, because they get to just drive forward and road grade instead of having to react. And I think that's something that I've palpably seen is that these guys are being unleashed a little more. I think they're having a little more fun, frankly, and they're being like, all right, now I get to do what I want to do instead of having to react to what the other team is doing, which is what that 4-4-2 was really doing, because it was so defensive and so counterattacking. Now, you know, guys like Bernardeschi get to go up and have, and Bernardeschi has had a really low key, excellent game today. And that I think is the difference. I think it's setting guys free on the attacking side. And it remains to be seen just how free they're going to be able to get going forward against better teams. We're not going to get that, probably not going to get that test until we play Napoli after Christmas. But for the time being, while they just build this up and build up some energy in this formation against lower level teams, that's going to be a major deal. I think now Wednesday becomes very interesting, I think, because you're looking at playing in a, you know, playing Malmo in a game where you just want to pile up goals just in case Chelsea, you know, only win 1-0 or something at Zenit, and you can have an outside chance of catching them on goal difference. That's going to be another big marker, is to see just how much this change has affected that mentality.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Just kind of a side note, I thought it was in Champions League, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought it was head-to-head record that decided the on
the head-to-head record. Is, but the head-to-head is even now.
Well, yeah, okay. And, well, yeah. I thought it was on, like, goals.
And
like,
I don't think there might be, like, head-to-head goal differences the better. Hold on, let me see.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while since I've looked.
Well, we know who's got the head-to-head goal difference.
The head-to-head goal difference is definitely Chelsea.
my heart.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Chelsea. It is goal difference. No, you're right. I am wrong. Yeah, goal difference in head-to-head matches is the tiebreaker. So yeah, we would have to wait. We would need Chelsea to drop points.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I don't know. I've already given up on that. So
I don't know. I'm not expecting it, but at the same time, we were talking right after the draw that about not wanting to go to Russia in the winter.
Yeah, true. So I guess I have a negativity bias towards Juventus and a positivity bias towards other teams.
I'm not expecting them to drop points, but if they were to, in the scenario that they would do it, is in going on a road game to Zenit.
But yeah, just very quickly back to the kind of the formation talk there. I was just, as you were talking, I was looking up the heat map courtesy of whoscore.com. Thank you very much. Yeah, like I said, I was specifically concerned about just Dybala's positioning. And well, unfortunately, this is an audio-only platform, but I'll describe it as well as I can.
Wax poetically.
Yes, I will. As he looked at the waves crashing on the ocean front.
That's right.
As Dybala stepped onto the pitch. No, I don't know. I don't know why I'm chatting. So Dybala's position really is this kind of right of center, really just ahead of the midline, really. Right of center, definitely not fully out wide, but not centrally, just this kind of in the middle on the right side, but then pretty close to the middle line, actually much closer to the middle line than to the opposition goal line there. That's where, like, the hottest part is, I guess, the darkest part. So yeah, pretty interesting there. But in general, his spots are kind of really everywhere. I mean, it's kind of everywhere, but that the most prominent spot is that right of center position, just ahead of the central midfield, which, and again, anybody can look this up just on whoscored.com.
And he was, and that's interesting because it's, you know, I think that that gives him a much better ability when you consider that Bernardeschi and Kulusevski were pushing up a lot farther than the wide midfielders often do in that in the 4-4-2. You've got him much more capable of truly connecting the lines. Like, some of the most useful attacks going down were Dybala or somebody like Locatelli, a little bit, you know, moving a little bit further up, releasing one of the wingers, either Kulusevski or Bernardeschi, going down the field. And then Dybala would come up and trail, and he'd either get a layoff or he'd latch onto a loose ball if a defender got a foot on it. And those were some of his best shots. I think that it allows him to be the trigger on the attack a lot more than if he's up at the top, kind of isolated with only one other option in the strike pair to get. And we always talk about how when he's not really in his best form, or when the team's not in his best form, that he has that bad habit of dropping really deep to try and get the ball and start something. I think with the 4-2-3-1, it makes that less of a major issue, because when he does that, he's got more options to get it up to. And then he can slide in behind and either orchestrate from further up the pitch once they recycle it back to him, or just get a layoff and blast it at goal. So I think that's he's much more of a pivot and a fulcrum point in connecting the lines in this formation from that trequartista position than he really ever was as a segunda punta in that particular 4-4-2.
No, that's one of the things I noticed as well, is that he was really, like you described it, he was a fulcrum of the attack, you know, whether it was a combination with Cuadrado or Kulusevski on the right, or if he was, laying it off to Locatelli and Locatelli sprayed it out wide to left or right. And then, you know, especially in the first half, I noticed, you know, he would do something like that. And then he'd kind of sit in that little pocket kind of at the top of the box where there weren't many defenders around him. And man, there were a few times where they had passed it a split second earlier, he was just absolutely wide open for a shot. But I think it really, you know, as much as we said, you know, from the first days of Max Allegri being, you know, rehired, is that now you can really tell that the attack is both literally and figuratively built around Dybala, because he can now, in this 4-2-3-1, do so much as compared to when he's playing further up the field. And especially when you've got a striker like Alvaro Morata, who's struggling right now, is not necessarily on the ball that much. You know, he's almost in a sense relying on Morata to get the ball. And yeah, it just, this gets Dybala on the ball more, a lot like it gets Locatelli on the ball more. And when two of your most creative players are touching the ball, 80 times for Dybala against Genoa, and I think it was 106 or 108 for Locatelli, that's a good thing. You want them to see more of the ball, because then usually good things are going to happen.
105. Close. Jinx, you owe me a soda. But
and I send you that in Bitcoin.
Yeah, sure. Save the environment, save the Bitcoins. I agree with you. Also, just to talk about Morata for a second, I don't think he had a particularly bad game. He would have had a goal or two were it not for Salvatore Sirigu kind of going all Hulk on us.
That's true, but you can also, and not to mention my post-game thread again, but I mean, you can tell the frustration starting to get.
Oh, yeah, he's really upset. But I think it was a particular brand of frustration this time, whereas like, early, you know, in games in the recent past, he's been really frustrated because he just hasn't been playing well. In this game, he put himself in a lot of really good positions and was sniping off some really good shots. And Sirigu was just that damn good. I mean, that ball at the end of the first half how the hell it's still difficult for me to believe that Sirigu managed to save that. I mean, Italian goalkeepers are like fine wines, man. That's just, they don't crack. But I think that he did better on the whole today than he has in a long time. I think if he, and I think if he keeps playing like this, the game, the goals are going to come.
He was definitely pretty peeved off when he was subbed off though.
Yeah. And I, well, I think that also had to do with what was going on with the circumstances of his yellow card. Cause it almost looked, it almost looked to me like when he was booked, somebody on Genoa, like he said something to somebody, to one of the Genoa defenders, and the Genoa defender looked at the ref and said, "Did you hear what he just said?" or something like that. And at that point, the ref booked him. I don't quite understand. Obviously, you know, we're not going to know that unless Morata says something, but the media is going to make a hound out of that over the next couple of days. But I think that just had more to do with the circumstances of his booking than anything else. And also, like I said, it certainly would be frustrating to be in the right spots the way he had been over the course of that game and not come away with anything when he really kind of did deserve to have something.
Yeah, and like Sergio always says, I mean, Morata is a very streaky player. So it's...
Oh, yeah. The dearly departed Sergio.
The dearly departed Sergio.
Yeah. Almost also, as good as that movie, The Departed.
And I know we've been talking mainly about the tactics itself for the first part of the show, but we would be remiss now that we've gotten this far into the episode without mentioning, holy crap, Juan. Like, no. Damn. As in the words of the immortal Ron Simmons, damn. Like that was something. I know what's going to be number one on my goals countdown come May this year. So that's a nice little, piece of work already.
Even if he didn't intend it to be
that's even better, Frank. That makes it even better for me, frankly, because he was trying to go for a near post cross and ends up doinking it off. It was a double doink. He doinked it off the bottom of the crossbar, off the inside of the post, and then in.
Almost as good was Chiellini's reaction. I know the Juventus Twitter account did a little bit of the enhance. Yeah. And you just see Chiellini's, and obviously we've got, you know, the photo tool on our site, so we're able to see all these things. But as you can see, Chiellini's facial progression go on as the ball's going both over Sidigu's hand and then hitting off the post. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Is he really going to do this?
Yeah. And especially after Calhanoglu did the same thing in the Inter game yesterday.
Yeah.
That was, it very much was anything you can do, I can do better moment. Cause you know, I mean, when was the last time that the same league had two Olympicos in one round?
I can't remember two times in one season, let alone two times in one weekend.
Yeah, that was an incredible goal, and it just goes to show any money that they give Juan Cuadrado is well-earned money. So just, you know, re-sign him, please.
And I know we were mentioning both heat maps and the amount of touches players had today. Well, Juan Cuadrado, if you look at his heat map from the Genoa game, there's a lot of I'm looking at it right now. It feels like the whole right wing is basically yellow, which on Who Scored is you were there a lot, which is no surprise. But then you think about how many touches he had, and it was 135, which is, I feel like, one of the highest numbers we've seen in a while.
Yeah, I think Dybala had like 70 or 80. So that's
Dybala had 80, yeah. And then like we said, Locatelli 105. But yeah, 135 is I mean, I can't remember what it was midweek win, but yeah,
he did that in a couple of games under Sadi from the right back spot as well, when he just kind of was the attacking fulcrum from the right wing for a lot of that season.
And I mean, some of it is the byproduct of just the way the game is. I mean, when you've got 70 almost 71% possession, obviously a lot of your players are going to see a lot of the ball. But yeah, when you've got 135 touches, no matter how much possession you have, that's just crazy.
And from the right back spot.
Yeah.
Like when a defender has 135 touches, you're talking about a game when you were hanging on, you know, when you were parking the bus and holding on for dear life, you know, the way we thought the way the Chelsea game looked like.
Yeah, it felt like Juventus as a team had 135 touches against Chelsea.
Yeah, and now, you know, here we are, you know, two, three, four, five different guys had 100 touches in this game. It was Cuadrado, Bentancur, Locatelli, Chiellini, and De Ligt. The thing is, unlike a game like Chelsea, Chiellini and De Ligt, a lot of their touches were, you know, up towards the halfway line, looking to, you know, looking to release guys. Delict had a couple of shots on goal. Yeah, he had three. He had as many shots on goal as Morata did. And yeah, Chuck, it's amazing.
What were you thinking of your large quadded countrymen unleashing a couple of long distance shots?
Yeah, why not? I mean, if you have 71% ball position, I mean, why not? You know, go on. You know, everybody get in on the party. Then I'm surprised he didn't do some no look passes while he was at it. Really, no. In all seriousness, in a game like this, it really is. I mean, just, you know, everybody just get in on the party, and I mean, to not face a single shot all game. I mean, yeah, at that point, you just think, you know, let's just have a pop and just like see. See if it maybe rebounds or deflects off someone and just goes in. So, I mean, it, you know, like these kinds of games are going to get that the confidence to do something like that.
If I have one issue with the way Allegri handled this game, it's once Dybala scored, why not give one of the kids a little bit of a thing? Like, why not give Matias Sula a little bit of time? Or, you know,
you mean like an actual debut
instead of just 30 seconds to watch a penalty kick fly over the bar. I know I wrote this in my post-match on that game, but I was angry about that. Like, that's your guy's professional debut as a first team player. And you're not even going to put him in a situation where he touches the ball. Like, I mean, yes, he was stripped off before and he was stripped off and ready to come on before the penalty was taken. I get that. But was called, but like put the guy in a situation where he can at least kick the ball. I'm a little, did Pellegrini come off just because Allegri was concerned about the yellow?
Yeah. That's what he said after the game, is that Pellegrini came off because of the yellow, and obviously he didn't want to risk it. And, you know, brought Sandro on, and I think he was very if I'm remembering correctly, he was very complimentary of how Pellegrini played. So
yeah,
it wasn't because he was struggling by any means. It was just
I was just afraid he was hurt when I saw him coming off.
Yeah,
but the yellow card makes sense.
Yeah,
and it also does make sense that you might want to have to protect him on that, because, you know, sorry if I make you have to do a little bit more work, Danny, but he plays like a bit of a doesn't he?
He's a pest. Like, he's a pest. He's, yeah. And I mean, like, honestly, I remember when I was in college, you know, that's what it felt like our entire team's fullbacks were, just pests.
Yeah.
And you know what? You need, you know, as we've talked about plenty of times on this podcast, some of our favorite players from years past, they're dicks. I mean, you think about it, Stefan Lichtsteiner.
He's
but he's our Mario Mandzukic, exactly the same thing. So you think about it. I mean, hell, throw Arturo Vidal in there.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
You know, some of the most beloved players of the last decade for Juventus.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
I don't know if you've watched All or Nothing yet, Chucks, but you deserve to go out in the sunshine and sunbathe after that comment.
I've not actually yet.
But yeah, like I was saying, some of the most beloved players they've got a little bit of an attitude to them.
And
I think Pellegrini, you know, he's brought that to a team that honestly doesn't have much of it.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I like it. Like, you know, in the Lazio game, he was, you know, the way he played, like there was a point early in the second half where you could see Felipe Anderson was visibly angry. And, you know, it was really frustrated about just how well he was playing, but also because, you know, he was, like you were saying, he was a real pest, and he'd taken a couple of pieces out of him over the course of the game there. He doesn't look like he looks like he's pretty free with the trash talk, and it is kind of refreshing to have a guy like that in the team again. And it's another reason why I really want him to keep going, because really see if this is a claim that he can solidify on this roster and in this starting 11, because there so far has not been a game in which he has not been good, at the very least good, if not really excellent. I want to see him keep playing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing you worry about is that, you know, he has a few bad games right off the bat and then his confidence just goes in the tank, but that definitely hasn't happened for him. And I think that's not only has Allegri rewarded him with more playing time of late, but he's backing it up with continuously solid performances. And honestly, with how up and down Sandro has been ever since that strong start, I mean, is consistently solid is going to do the job when you've got a defense that has struggled pretty much, for a good portion of the season.
I mean, when you have a guy like, when you have a Lichtsteiner-esque player who's just who just gets on guys' nerves and plays like he's, plays so hard that there was a joke that my friends and I had about Lichtsteiner, how to make a door. One, place Stefan Lichtsteiner in front of a wall. Step two, tell Stefan Lichtsteiner, run. Step three, once Stefan Lichtsteiner has broken through the wall, hang the door. You know, he plays like that. And it was, that was one of the things that really, really put Juve on that, on the path to greatness was having a player with an attitude like that. It set the tone. It also got rid of Marco Motta on the right side of defense. And Marco Motta was a very bad, bad man. But Pellegrini also does really look to be having some quality. And I've seen a lot of people in social media, a lot of people in conversations I've had say that they don't think that Pellegrini is good enough to start for Juventus, that we're just taking a shine. They think that we're just taking a shine to him because Sandro's been so inconsistent. I don't necessarily think that's the case. His first game of the year was against Napoli, and he was really good in that game for the first, and then they took him off basically because he didn't have 90 minutes in his legs at that point. But he played really well in that game. His second game of the season was against Lazio, played really well in that game against a guy in Felipe Anderson, who's one of the most informed wingers in Serie A. And now you bring him in here again, these last two games, and he's again excelled. And yes, those were, these last two games are against two of the bottom teams in the league, but you can only beat who you play who's in front of you. And you also, again, look back before that, one of the teams that's fighting for the title and one of the teams that Juve is going to be fighting for that fourth spot were his first two opponents of the year. And he really excelled against them. So I do think he's got some quality. And I do think that he could be, a Lichtsteiner on the left side who sets the tone, aggravates guys and starts, maybe bringing back some of the Grinta. You need the Grinta guys, and they've been in desperately short supply, especially since Mandzukic left.
And I'm just glad Juventus is getting something from the Spinazzola swap deal because, it was looking bad the first couple of years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that was pretty embarrassing.
at the time, I didn't necessarily mind it because, Pellegrini, he hadn't played a lot at Roma, but what he had played I'd liked.
Well, that's the thing about that deal is because I remember with speaking with Bren from Chiesa di Totti, and we were both upset about that deal because both players were liked by their now former clubs. So it's like, Bren was like, why the hell are we giving up Pellegrini? And then I'm like, well, you're getting Spinazzola and Juventus is giving up Spinazzola. So it's not like you're getting a bad player in return.
Yeah, and then he went on the typical, sojourn of loans that so many good players just don't come back from. Or if they do, they're in their late 20s, like Immobile was when he got back to Lazio. Now think of what the forward line might be right now if somebody at the Juventus Academy had decided to, or in the front office had decided to keep Ciro Immobile around. Can never accurately predict these things, but if he turned into the same player he is now and he was in a Juventus shirt, that's a lot of things that Juventus wouldn't be, wouldn't be talking about missing. Now we'd still probably be seeing him, miss shot after shot after shot with the national team, but that's an entirely different story. But, it's like I said in that article that I posted during the international break, we have to start looking at the younger players and we have to start letting them be contributors. Because a lot of them are good enough. And you just have to give them that chance. Because if you do, like Roberto Mancini said a couple of weeks ago in a press conference, sometimes in 6 weeks, in the space of 6 months, he goes from guy who'd be on the fringes of your bench to guy who's playing for the national team. Like look at Giacomo Raspadori at Sassuolo. He came pretty much out of nowhere, and right now he should be, in my opinion, in contention to be a starter in the World Cup playoffs, because again, Immobile sucks once he puts on the other shade of blue. And this is why I'm, this is why I talk about a guy like Rovella so much, because bring Rovella on back into the fold next year, put him in again, next to a guy like Locatelli, because he's been playing, you know, Genoa's been garbage all year, but Rovella has not been. Rovella has played well. Make that, and then you've got a really inexpensive but potentially quality move. Now, we got Rovella for what, 18 million?
We got to see part of that swap deal play today too.
Yeah, that's right. Porto Novo played at the very end. And he actually scored a goal in midweek, didn't he? Or no, I think it got chalked off or something like that.
It did, yeah. Because yeah. They lost 3-0.
Yeah, they lost. Yeah, but he was, you know, but he had something in the net and was disallowed. But for something like Rovella, first off, and I mean, you don't want to be making first team decisions like this, but, you know, play Rovella next year, and then maybe that's a little bit less of a plus Valenza move and a little bit more of an actual sporting move then at that point. And then again, young guy, hungry guy. What did we, you know, we've got to get hungry again. Let's get these hungry guys in. Chiesa's hungry. Locatelli's hungry. You know, Pellegrini's hungry after 2 years out in loans. Let's get the hungry guys in there and let's see if they eat.
Matthijs de Ligt is definitely hungry. Look at him.
I'm surprised that there is any food within a 2 mile radius of Matthijs de Ligt. He probably just eats it all.
He's just constantly like that gif of him just shoving pasta into his face.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, imagine if him and Michael Phelps were roommates.
Oh, that's right. A lot of calories being consumed.
Yeah.
A lot of calories.
It's like an offensive lineman's dinner, you know.
All right, let's wrap things up with a couple of Twitter questions here. First one from our buddy Vincent Ferrara at @Juventino_BNA. Does Max Allegri find a winning formula only to give up on it after a few wins, just on principle?
I don't necessarily know about giving up on it just on principle, because we have seen in the past that when he makes a change and it works, he sticks to it. What I think could spook him, and we saw this the last time the 4-2-3-1 happened. You know, the 4-2-3-1, we kind of rampaged through everybody until Cardiff was Cardiff, and then he started the 4-2-3-1 with the 4-2-3-1 next year, and Juve were still winning, but they were also leaking goals at a larger rate than normal for them at the time. And by about November, Allegri kind of panicked on that count and gave up the 4-2-3-1 and put in an extra midfielder. At that point, it was Blaise Matuidi, who started getting much more regular playing time as the third man in the mid. That's the thing that I think could see this get abandoned if it does. And I really hope it doesn't. But if you know, especially if Juve start playing higher quality up, you know, when Juve do start hitting the higher quality opposition again after Christmas, and if they start bleeding goals, if the results start going south a little bit, does Allegri start dropping back to his got to keep the goals out first, instead of just trusting the formation to do its job and just win the game? That's the scenario in which I could see us regressing back from this. And I do think it would be a regression, because unless he comes up with something else that's not that 4-4-2, the team I think would just go back to playing like garbage. But that's the scenario I could see. This I could see the 4-2-3-1 kind of being abandoned.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add to that. I think, I mean, Allegri is stubborn, but he's not like completely absurdly delusional. I think at the end of the day, if we keep winning, most of all, if we just keep, like you said, Sam, if we keep clean sheets or in a reasonable level, then I think, yeah, I mean, I imagine he'll keep it. Again, midweek, we have Malmö at home. And yeah, if we keep a clean sheet there, then actually we'll have had 6 goals conceded and 6 in Champions League and then 16 and 16 in the league. So it would be a perfect 1 goal conceded. Well, perfect, actually. Not very perfect, but yeah, a straight 1 goal conceded in every game on average. So food for thought.
question here from @BornBruin77. After watching All or Nothing, and of course, hindsight being 2020, do you think, in light of how the current season has gone, that Max Allegri was the right choice? Or should they have stayed the course with Andrea Pirlo? It doesn't seem to be any better under Max.
This I haven't seen it, so I can't comment on that.
I was just about to say, obviously, Chucks is going to cop out because he hasn't watched, and I'm not sure how much Sam has watched, and for the record, I have watched all of it. So
I haven't seen a ton. I haven't been able to see a ton of it yet. From what I have seen, I do think that Pirlo should have been kept on. Not anything to do with Max, although I, you know, we all know that everybody who's ever spoken to me about Juventus knows I have my problems with Max, but not because of any specific problem that I have with Max in terms of why I think Pirlo should have been kept on. I just thought that things were trending upward by the end of the season with Pirlo. I think he had started to find his footing. I think the team had started to find their footing in that last month of the season. And at the end of the day, I think a project needs to actually be a project. And I don't think that we should have cut another coach loose after a year. It was a disappointing year, to be sure, but I think that we should have stayed with that project for another season, as opposed to just making another panic firing and restarting the process all over again, because that's why, as the questioner said, things haven't looked that much different with Max, because Max has had to build from the ground up again, where Pirlo looked by the end of the season like there was kind of a foundation to be worked from. Yeah, I would have enjoyed seeing Pirlo in for another season. I do kind of think that we would be in a little bit better of a position.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say, sorry, very quickly, Danny, I don't think Pirlo should have been appointed in the first place. So I think that's really kind of the whole, you know, from there, it was just a chain reaction of like catching up to your initial mistake. But I think he shouldn't have been appointed in the first place.
Okay, so your homework for next week is to watch All or Nothing, Chucks. There you go.
Yeah. Well, I'll be on vacation, but
you've got a long flight ahead of you. You just killed
some time. Yeah. True. Yeah. I'll see if Andrea wants to watch it with me. Yeah, she might actually. Yeah. So hey, why not?
Well, on that note, as we've assigned Chuck some homework for the week and all that good stuff, thank you for the Twitter questions. As always, you can send them to us at Juventus Nation on Twitter. You can follow us there as well as on Facebook. Search Black and White and Red All Over. As always, like we said at the beginning of the show, you can follow us on your favorite podcasting platform, whether that is iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. Subscribe, like, all that good stuff there. Leave us a rating. You know the deal by now. We say it every week. So for Sam, for Chucks, and for the dearly departed Sergio Romero, this is Danny saying thank you very much for listening, and we will talk to you guys next week.